Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the Swift voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Swift indeed, Matthew. How are we?
We're good, thank you. This is going to be a quick one, isn't it?
It is. It's going to be a Kepa special today, I believe.
Yep, absolutely. A Kepa special, a Carabao Cup special, a Mendy, a Tuchel, a Kelleher, a call it whatever you want to call it special, because arguably the most remarkable goalkeeping talking point of the season took place at the weekend and we simply cannot ignore it. Time is a little of the essence. It is Tuesday today and this is a little later than usual. So just to say, we won't make a habit of this. Monday will continue to be our regular recording day, but neither of us were available yesterday. So we're doing it now and we'll keep it strictly Carabao Cup final and hopefully do a bumper episode at the start of next weekend to cover off everything else. Sound good?
Perfect. Sounds good to me. I'm in.
Shall we get on with the show?
Let's do it.
Okay, so EFL Cup final, Richard, Liverpool defeating Chelsea, Kepa Arrizabalaga coming on for Edouard Mendy. I feel like this is a keeper caper, it's a commentary corner, it's a save of the weekend, it's a rightly or wrongly, remember when we used to do that one? No goalkeeper assist klaxon, but there is a goalkeeper scoring. So much to cover, over to you.
I really don't know where to start. This was captivating, I think it's fair to say. Really interesting game. Obviously, two very good performances during normal time. Kelleher, Mendy. Of course, we are going to go into depth about the decision to bring Kepa on, but just a fascinating afternoon's football.
Yeah, it really was. So many facets of this to get into. We can look at the stats, the judgment calls, the psychology, the penalties themselves, but how about we begin with the performances over the 120 minutes or so of the two starting goalkeepers? So those, of course, being Quivín Kelleher and Edouard Mendy.
Excellent. Look, I think, first and foremost, I give huge credit to Jurgen Klopp for playing Kelleher. And I know that this is one where, and again, I suppose hindsight is a lovely thing, but I say this with foresight as well, in that often get asked what should happen in this moment when you're going into a final. You've had a goalkeeper play all the rounds, the majority of the rounds, and then you get to the final. Do you put your number one back in or not? Personally, I think you stick with the player that helped get you there, that has the positive momentum with them. And so it was fascinating to see that, of course, Mendy comes in for Chelsea in place of Kepa and Kelleher starts for Liverpool. Which for me, again, huge credit to Jurgen Klopp, because I think it could have been a very easy decision to put Alisson back in. I'm sure a lot of people would have expected that. But Kelleher has been very good during the competition. It's really helped him make a name for himself, I think it's fair to say. And I thought during this final, he looked very composed throughout. He's got a lovely style about him, very laid back, looks very calm, very in control, makes a brilliant reaction save down to his left, makes a good save with his feet as well. I thought his general play was very positive, and you'd never have known that he was a young goalkeeper coming into a stage like this. And the bit with Kelleher, we touched on this a few times, he's not one of these goalkeepers that's been on loan to all these different places. For me, it's a really nice case study that as much as there is the belief that the players do need to go out, get the loans, get the games in, which I do believe in, by the way, but he's an example that actually sometimes if you're good enough, you don't necessarily need to. You know, he seems to have a fantastic mentality, you know, having not stepped into an arena like that, certainly, to then do what he did, massive, massive credit to him.
Okay, so Edouard Mendy, his performance. We'll talk about that first. Fantastic double save from Naby Keita and then Sadio Mane. I mean, that alone is up there with one of the saves of the season.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And it did make me smile. And I won't give Neville too many mentions in this episode because I feel like we do mention him far too much. But it was as if he didn't see any of the saves. You know, every time there was a save, he didn't ever really reference the goalkeeper. And the only way he did in this one was saying that Mendy would be disappointed with where he parried it. Well, I don't think he would, because it did come through bodies. He did well to get down as sharply as he did to his right-hand side, get a good parry. And then what I liked about the second save is just the intelligence he showed in order to put himself into an area where he gives himself the best chance, made himself as big as he could by diving to his right. You see his left arm extended upwards ever so slightly, and he does cover a large area, made it very difficult for, it was Mane, wasn't it, coming in, made it very difficult for him. And in the end, of course, there's an element of luck after that, in that once you put yourself into that position, you give yourself percentage-wise the best chance of making the save. And the fact that it then comes off, it must have been his elbow, I think, and goes over the bar. Of course, that bit you're not necessarily in control of, but he certainly deserved that little bit of good fortune.
So let's fast forward then to the end of extra time. It's about 118 minutes on the clock, and Kepa is readying himself on the bench to come on, clearly for penalties. What was going through your mind when that was happening?
For me, it's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And I heard all the comments afterwards. I haven't put anything on Twitter for a while, but I just got to a point, I've got to put something out there. And it was fascinating to see the responses I got to what I put out, in that naturally I got a couple of people saying, oh, that's great in hindsight. No, absolutely not hindsight. This is very much with foresight. I had a very similar argument a few years ago with the Kepa incident 3 years ago, where it was ridiculous that they were trying to sub him in the last minute. And I remember I put something out backing up Kepa effectively, and I remember I got hammered for that, which, look, I don't necessarily condone his actions in terms of how he was on the pitch, but I fully agree with him even then. And again, by all means, if someone has the time and wishes to go back over my tweets, you'll see a flurry of tweets around them where I was very much backing up the fact that Kepa should not have been subbed. And it's exactly the same here, because I go back to it and I'll always look at things from a real logical perspective. So for me, what would the reasons be for bringing on Kepa? So then someone's replied to me and said, oh, it's psychological. Okay, but that's such a broad term. What does that even mean? Psychological. So what, are you saying that by bringing on Kepa, you've now scared Liverpool? Are they now scared that Mendy's going off and Kepa's coming on? Is it because, is he physically bigger? Is he sharper? Is he more powerful? Like, what's the psychological aspect to this? And someone else came back and said, oh, it's about getting the extra 1%. Again, where is the extra 1%? Let's look at this logically. It makes no sense whatsoever. You're bringing on a goalkeeper who hasn't even done a warm-up, you know, let alone be ready for this penalty shoot. Not even done a warm-up. So at the start of the game, you're warming up Mendy. So you imagine it's a February afternoon, you're probably quite cold, and you're sat there for 2.5 hours doing absolutely nothing, and now you're being asked to come on in a massive moment to show huge power in order to explosively dive and make saves, and also stepping in for a goalkeeper who, by the way, was superb throughout the game. You know, I know we mentioned the double save. There was also a brilliant save down to his left, another save of note. Like, he was excellent during the game. So first and foremost, I don't think Mendy should have played. I think Kepa should have played. That's by the by. Once you've then started Mendy, you finish with Mendy. So actually, you are just bringing him on in a situation where he's already on the back foot for me. You know, does it make a difference if Mendy had a poor game? Maybe. You know, maybe you bring on Kepa and he could be a hero. But the problem is at the moment is that, or the problem for Kepa in particular, is that Mendy has been fantastic this season, last season. And actually, it's worked brilliantly lately, and that it's really helped rebuild Kepa. And we spoke about it so many times in this pod, in that where he has been used, where he has played, he's played excellently. If he doesn't come on, he continues that positive narrative. But by bringing him on, and it was so evident to me during the shootout, there was one in particular, the one from Van Dijk. I mean, he's actually stood on that side of the goal, but he just can't get the speed of movement. The one that he gets a top hand to, it's so obvious to read the penalty, and he can't get the explosive power to his left in order to get what would ordinarily be quite a comfortable save. So there's just so much of this that annoyed me. Tuchel's barely got any criticism from what I can see, or certainly nowhere near enough. Of course, Kepa's got a lot. And I actually fully agreed with Jamie Redknapp when I was listening to the comments afterwards, and he was saying, it's just nonsense. It's not like you're bringing on a man mountain who's going to come in and the Liverpool players are going to be scared. Like, where is the psychological element to this? It's, you know, for any argument that, and there was someone in particular kept coming back to me on Twitter. And in fairness, I could see he was coming round to what I was saying, but he kept trying to make certain points. But there's not a single point in this that I can agree with, that there really isn't.
Okay, I mean, there's so many elements to this. Firstly, not in defence of Thomas Tuchel, but he did come out after the game, didn't he? I'm just going to quickly read out his quotes. Let's see what we've got here. So he said after the game, do you think we do this and don't talk to the players? The players know the plan and we've done it before. If you want to blame somebody, blame me. This is not a problem. I take the decisions and I don't take them to try to be the hero. We took the decision like we did last time in a penalty shootout. That referring to the Super Cup final, of course, when he did come on against Villarreal, saved a couple of penalties in that one, and they won the trophy. So this is something that has worked before. He said, we took the decision like we took last time in a penalty shootout because Kepa is training with the players on a daily basis. They know how good he is, and he simply has more time to do this than Edu on the training ground. I take the decisions when I take the decisions, and I only take them when I want to take them. I cannot rejudge my decisions after the outcome. We cannot know what would have happened if we had left Edu on the pitch. Sometimes it works out and sometimes it does not. This is life as a football coach.
Which is fine. which is fine. And it's making out as if researching the way in which a penalty taker will go takes that long. And it really doesn't. I can tell you that from experience, that Edouard Mendy, it would have taken him half an hour to go through the five main penalty takers. And if you're going to go beyond that, maybe a little bit longer. It doesn't take that long. And this is the other part to it that I forgot in my previous rant, which was the whole idea of being better at penalties. Now, look, I used to pride myself on saving penalties. The truth is, a lot of the time, the majority of the time, you've made up your mind where you're going before the penalty's taken, because it's all premeditated, it's all researched. So it's a little bit more difficult during normal time because a player might mix it up a little bit. But when it comes to a penalty shootout, you ordinarily know if there's five takers, you know where you're going for all five. So then once again, I come back to the point of, okay, so by bringing on Kepa, you must therefore think he exceeds Edouard Mendy in certain areas. Because if you're saying it's because Edouard Mendy can't do his homework, that's a different matter. And I would disagree with that because, again, I don't think it takes that long to make a decision on where you're going to dive for 5/10 penalties. You know, I think you can figure that out quite quickly. If it's not that and you think that Kepa is better at penalties, which actually, according to stats that I've seen when they save penalties during shootouts, one's at 68%, one's at 69% in terms of goals scored, there is no difference. Yes, there's a little bit of difference in regular play, but certainly when it comes to shootouts, there's no difference statistically between the two goalkeepers. So again, by bringing on Kepa, I'm trying to think of a good example. If you had a, I don't know, and I don't want to disrespect any goalkeepers here because I think most goalkeepers back themselves to save penalties. But if you had a goalkeeper who maybe, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but shot stopping wasn't their forte, that they weren't the most agile, they weren't the quickest around the goal, but they were just actually really solid goalkeepers, great distribution, come for crosses, commanding, but actually weren't brilliant shot stoppers, and you had a David De Gea on the bench. And you know what, even David De Gea is probably a bad example because we saw what happened to him in the Europa League final. So, you know, but if you had someone on the bench who was incredibly agile, quick feet, powerful, then I kind of get it a little bit more. But I come back to my point. Is Kepa quicker than Mendy? I mean, if he is, it's marginal. Is he more athletic? Is he more powerful? Has he got better hand-eye coordination? Is he going to outsmart the taker? Well, that's kind of irrelevant if you've already decided what you're going to do. If it's the type of taker that waits until the keeper moves and then goes the other way, has he got the ability to hold his position that little bit longer and then explode from the spot that little bit better? Again, if it's yes to any of these, then I get it. I guess where my point comes in, or my stance comes in, is that I think you've got two fantastic goalkeepers here in Mendy and Kepa. I just don't think there's enough of a difference between the two to justify bringing him on. And I don't think the psychological impact, if that was part of this, it's not quite there for me.
So you've mentioned the stats there. Let's just quickly go over those. There was a good article yesterday in The Independent by Tom White. I'm just going to read this out verbatim because he's done some really good research. Now, Kepa had been on the winning side in 6 out of 8 shootouts before Sunday. This is before the shootout had occurred, with each of those wins seeing 2 opposing takers fail to score, including at least one save. Overall, he'd faced 40 shootout penalties before Sunday, saving 10 and seeing 3 other opposing takers miss the target, while 27 kicks, that's 67.5%, had been scored. Mendy had faced 26 penalties in 5 shootouts. 18 of those were scored. That equates to 69.2%, with Mendy's teams winning 2 and losing 3. He's faced 32 in-game penalties, with 30 converted. So only 2 not converted in 32 penalties faced for Mendy. For Kepa, it's 24 in-game penalties and 17 converted. That gives an overall success rate of 68.8% for penalties taken against Kepa before Sunday. That combines regulation and shootouts. And because Liverpool's perfect set lifted that to 73.3%, it still compares favourably to Mendy conceding from 82.8% of the spot kicks he's faced in all situations. Now, this is also where hindsight comes in, right? Because there was plenty of after-timing around this whole situation, and we'll come on to that later. But this is obviously a call that was made before the game. Tuchel's quotes confirm that. So, is it on him? Is it on the advice he's been given? Because what happens if it comes to that point and he then turns around to Kepa and says, do you know what? Edu's having a great game. I'm going to renege on the agreement we had and stick with him for penalties. What does that then say to Kepa? What does that mean for his psychology? Or is Kepa then thinking, thank goodness for that, because I didn't actually fancy it. And then, well, you know, and then what is actually going through Kepa's mind? Is he wanting to come on for penalties?
It's a great question. It's a great question. And of course, without being Kepa, we can't know for definite. All I can do is put myself in Kepa's shoes. And in that moment, if I'm honest, and people can view this however they want to view it, I would have felt in that moment, I've sat there for 120 minutes. The goalkeeper's having a fantastic game. I personally would have wanted the goalkeeper to stay on, genuinely. Like, if I'm being truthful, of course, you're given that opportunity. There is that part of you that thinks, yeah, I could be the hero here and I've not had to do anything prior. And all I've got to do is come on now. And if I save a pen, then I'm going to be the one they carry on my shoulders, et cetera, et cetera. But realistically, I think if you're able to take the emotional side out of it and you're to look at it purely logically, in that moment, Kepa had more to lose than gain. And actually, again, I go back to my point. He should have played the game anyway, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I'm always going to stand by that as well, in that I think if someone's helped bring you to the final, then for me, they've got the positive momentum with them. It is their everything for that season, because they are your cup goalkeeper. So I think he should have played anyway. So he already had so much positivity behind him. It would have been in that moment, I think, that Thomas Tuchel, and look, it's so much easier said than done, and you give Tuchel credit in that he's then stuck to his word, apparently. But I do think in that moment, your goalkeeper's kept a clean sheet in 118 minutes worth of football, made a couple of unbelievable saves, and now you're about to go into a penalty shootout. And again, I keep coming back to the fact that he's cold, and people don't seem to buy into this all that much, but I'll just give the example of, if you're sat there on a freezing cold day and someone asks you to sprint 100 meters, it's hard. Like, to get yourself going isn't that easy. If you're going to swing a golf swing and you've done absolutely nothing, that first swing you hit on a driving range is terrible because you're cold. Your muscles aren't warm. They're not flexible. They're not powerful. So to then suddenly step into an environment like that, again, I know there's a lot, and we're able to dissect it now. And I appreciate that in the moment, you're not going to go into this level of detail. But that in itself, I think, is where the issue is, in that it's maybe very general thinking that's kind of got us to this point where it's kind of cliches. It's the whole, yeah, the psychological edge, the extra 1%. They're great words, lovely words, and they sound great. But again, without anything logically to back them up, I keep asking, where is that 1%? Where was it? Because I genuinely, for the life of me now, I cannot see it. And there's very few examples when I think I ever will see it. And certainly, and the reason I'm probably so passionate about this is I just think, and you've seen so many goalkeepers come out on Twitter and share a similar opinion, if I've played 118 minutes worth of football, you know, I think back to some of my greatest moments playing the game. Everton, we're drawing 1-1. I think Ben Hamer was on the bench, or Simon Moore was on the bench that day. If on 118 minutes, I look over and I see the manager put the board up and they're taking me off to bring another keeper on, I just think it's absolute nonsense, especially when you're having such a good game and this is your opportunity to complete that game, be the hero. Yeah, I just think it's nonsense. The fascinating thing with this penalty shootout was as well, and you know, someone then also responded and said, well, Kelleher didn't save any. Do you know what? He didn't. And I want to be really careful what I say here, because first and foremost, I want to make it known that I think Kelleher was fantastic on the day. He's had a fantastic competition. I'm so impressed with what I'm seeing. That being said, he wasn't that good in the penalty shootout, it's fair to say. And the reason I say that, and I want to be careful, because I don't want to start blaming goalkeepers when it comes to penalties, because I've said it before, there's very few opportunities to be a hero as a goalkeeper. So if we suddenly take away the penalty shootout, then you're not going to be left with a lot. The bit that was frustrating me was that the majority of Chelsea's takers adopt the technique which is now nearly unsavable, which is the like the Jorginho technique, where you essentially wait for the keeper to move and then you put it in the other corner. What happened for me was that Kelleher did move early on pretty much all of them, and he went the wrong way on so many of them. And I was just getting a little bit frustrated in that, had he have just held his position, at least he would have made the player score rather than buying into this technique, which again also leads to a completely new conversation in terms of how hard it is now to save a penalty. And we've spoken about this countless times on the pod, and it's becoming more and more evident. And we've seen it with the Middlesbrough-Man United shootout the other day, and now seeing it with this shootout as well. It's almost impossible for a goalkeeper, if the player is adopting that technique and they're waiting for you to move and they're putting it in the other corner and you're not allowed to move off your line, you're barely allowed to move, the player should score. In the way that they have here, they should score 21 out of 22. That's exactly where it is now in terms of penalties, because of the way that the rules are set up when it comes to taking penalties. So that being said, with Kelleher, my frustration was just that he just seemed to be moving that little bit early every time, and he was trying a few bits and pieces and didn't really get overly close to, there might have been one, I think, down low to his left from memory that he nearly got a hand to. But then when at the end, Jamie Carragher is branding him a hero, I think certainly massive, massive credit for the penalty he took, because I thought that was fantastic. The way he stepped up and he just showed everything he's about, so calm, shifted his body, went the other way, you know, Kepa bought into the little movement that he gave, and then he's whipped it into the other top corner. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. But in terms of the saving of penalties, as I say, just a little bit frustrated. He didn't wait a little bit longer on a few of them.
To go back to when Kepa came on, that was the one thing which surprised me the most. Exactly what you're saying there. He's cold. That's what I was saying to the guys I was watching it with. He's cold. He doesn't look warmed up. And I know I couldn't quite believe what I was seeing because, you know, Wembley's a big place. I'm sure there could have been somewhere to at least have some form of quick warm-up prior to coming on. I know he's been in the warm-up prior to the game and maybe at half-time, but like you say, it's that long wait just sitting there. Why wasn't anyone just serving him up volleys one after the other just to give him some kind of explosiveness, some kind of reactions, anything? You could see as they gathered for that pep talk before the pens, he was asking for a ball. He was pressing his hands against it, bouncing it ferociously on the floor, as you'd expect. Then on his walk to the penalties, he was still carrying on his exercises. He was still limbering up. I just can't believe he hadn't been through some form of prep prior to all of that. And you know, even, and maybe this is clutching at straws a little here, but even when he first came on, I thought the Chelsea fans could have perhaps played a bigger part. The boos of the Liverpool fans actually drowned out the Chelsea cheers. I don't know, perhaps if it had been an almighty roar around the ground, it would have given him a bit of a boost. Do you think that might have made a difference?
Yeah, I do. I fully agree. I think that the whole term, like I say, to give a psychological edge, as I say, it's just such a broad term. That's what it is for me. And you're right. Into what would a psychological edge be? You're right. It might be that the fans go absolutely nuts when he comes on because they're so excited. Their penalty hero's coming on. He is an absolute man mountain. He's a wall. You're not getting past him. And you can see the fear in the Liverpool players' eyes. That wasn't the case. So actually, what are you doing? You're bringing him in. Does that have that impact on the opposition? And I, again, and this is where I mentioned a couple of the tweets I had back where, oh, it's easy with hindsight. No, I promise you, I absolutely promise you, in the same way that I was saying the same thing a few years ago, and I've said the same thing, even when, like, Kepa's come on and they got the win, I'm still saying the same thing because I still believe that a goalkeeper who's played the game and played a very good game and is absolutely firing, I think percentages-wise, and again, whether we're ever going to be able to do a test that actually says whether this is true or not, I think percentages-wise, you are better off sticking with the goalkeeper you've got as opposed to bringing on a new goalkeeper. It's making me think of Deal or No Deal. Do you swap the box at the end or not? Although actually, in that case, apparently statistically, you should swap the box. But no, in this situation, you should not swap the goalkeeper is what I'm saying. I just think it's that. I go back to the term psychological advantage, 1% advantage. I just think a lot of the time they can be thrown around without any real substance. And I think in this situation, until someone gives me a legitimate argument how this could have been a positive thing, which at times there are, but until someone actually gives me that argument, for all the responses I got to my tweet that I put out, I've yet to find one that shifted my mindset at all.
The issue here, though, Rich, is that there are success stories. You've mentioned Tim Krul came on for Jasper Cillessen in the 2014 World Cup. He was a hero. Kepa himself, this season, has done this exact thing and been brought on for penalties, and it has been successful. So there's proof in the pudding there. And on the flip side of that, we then go to the after timing. We go to the hindsight, because had Kepa not come on and Chelsea lose that shootout in the same manner and Mendy doesn't get anywhere near any of those penalties, it's then potentially the argument of, well, Kepa came on earlier on in the season and Chelsea won. So why didn't they do it again? We did it before and it was successful. So I just think there are so many variables in penalty shootouts that it's natural for everyone to say it was a bad call because it didn't work out. But then if you go to those variables, Chelsea would have won the trophy if Mendy had been in goal. Chelsea would have won the trophy if Mount had scored two gilt-edged opportunities. If Pulisic scores, if Lukaku scores right at the end of normal time, if Lukaku holds his run before being ruled offside when he scored, if Kai Havertz, when he scored, looks across the line before being ruled offside. Jamie Redknapp, before the penalties, didn't say anything about it being the wrong decision. He said, obviously, they feel comfortable doing it. It was only after the event that he was then very passionate and forthright in his stance that it was rubbish, that it was nonsense, that he's not a good enough goalkeeper, that Mendy would have saved them. I just think there are so many variables leading up to that moment, and therefore, it's easy to create a reason, just like there is in any penalty shootout.
I agree. And what I'll say to that is, look, in the same way that you can have, you go to sleep the night before a game and you decide to go out and you party all night, and actually you go and play the next game and you get a man of the match performance. And then you've got the guy next to you who's had a good night's sleep, prepared perfectly, and has a nightmare of a performance. Sometimes you can do the right things and get the wrong result. Sometimes you can do the wrong things and get the right result. I'll always come back to logic. I'll always come back to process. I'll always come back to percentages. So once again, my question is, you've got Kepa, who's been sat on the bench for 3 hours, barely moved, or you've got Mendy, who's been fantastic throughout the game. Who are you genuinely going to play in that situation? So take the romanticism out, which so much of football is based on, the emotion, etc. Take that out of it. Look at it completely logically. And I'm going to ask you the question, who do you play? Let's look at it black and white. You've got Mendy, 120 minutes, clean sheet, goalkeeper of the year, whatever other trophies he's got over the last 18 months, absolutely flying in the game. Or you've got Kepa, who's been sat on the bench for 3 hours. Who do you play in the penalty shootout?
Yeah, absolutely. I play Mendy because of all the reasons that you stated. But I go back to the fact that Tuchel has obviously had this conversation with Kepa before. It's obviously been agreed that if it gets to this stage of the game, Mendy comes off and Kepa comes on. So it's then, really, like you say, it's on Tuchel to then make an executive decision and be the manager of Chelsea and say, actually, I've changed my mind. But then what does that then say to Kepa?
I think it's completely on Tuchel. But then I think also the conversation that takes place before the game, can we not add a little caveat in there, which is, if Mendy is fantastic and is keeping a clean sheet, I might not stick to this decision. You know, again, there's got to be flexibility in approach. And I feel like there's lessons in life here as well as goalkeeping. But there's got to be flexibility in your approach. It cannot be black and white that, yes, if we are drawing, you are definitely coming on. And I go back to, because look, by the way, if we're talking the game had been 3-3 and Mendy hadn't been particularly good and was maybe looking a little bit nervy and it wasn't really going, then actually it is a very different situation. In the same way that you see a goalkeeper that comes in after the team have just been drubbed 5-0 and then keeps a clean sheet. Similarly, how long did it take for someone to replace Peter Schmeichel at Man United? Because you're stepping into the shoes of someone who's deemed to be a bit of a legend. You know, so there's so much more to it than a simple black and white answer. And I fully appreciate the point that, you know, people can say, oh, that's lovely with hindsight. But again, I'll always come back to my point of percentages. You know, look, had Mendy have played the penalty shootout and had he have done exactly what Kepa did and he didn't save any and then he misses his own penalty, do I think we're having this conversation? No, I genuinely don't think we would be having this conversation. And I say that based on the fact that I don't think there would be enough positive arguments to say that Kepa should have come on. I think if we're sat here, I cannot imagine that I would have been saying, oh, Kepa's a penalty genius. And I know I'm repeating myself now, but going back to the fact that most penalties are premeditated as a goalkeeper, you know exactly what you're doing. So it's just about executing a skill. And there was plenty of time pre-game in order to know where you were going to dive for each penalty. So I just think if we're sat on this pod and it had been the other way around and Mendy had done this, I think we'd have referenced it, of course, and it would have been a bad day at the office in the end for Mendy if that's how it would have turned out. But no way we'd be having a conversation as deep as this. Look, had Kepa have been the hero, you know, in inverted commas, no, I still stick by this and I will stick by it forevermore, in the same way that I've got certain views on when you're facing a free kick, or, you know, certain views in terms of goalkeeping, things that I don't think will change in goalkeeping as a rule of thumb. And this for me is one. I think, as I say, and again, nothing is black and white and there's always room for flexibility. And there might be a situation where, I go back to the point I made before, where you've got a goalkeeper who's on the bench who is just the most agile, powerful, incredible shot stopper, but isn't starting because maybe they're not so dominant or not so fantastic when it comes to their distribution, etc. But yet the goalkeeper playing is a immobile, whoever it might be. Yeah, in that situation, I get it. I get why you would make the substitution, because you're bringing on someone who is clearly better and has a better chance of saving the penalties than the one you've got in goal. But no, had Kepa have saved a couple of penalties, look, no doubt we'd have congratulated him and what have you, but I would have absolutely stood by this point, and I will do next time it happens. If it ever happens again, my guess is that we won't see it all that often moving forward.
I'd love to see the stats as well on this, by the way, because from the 22 attempts, you've already referenced the penalties, really, but from those 22 attempts, both goalkeepers only moved in the correct direction three times each, and that's, from 22 attempts, so from 11 attempts each.
And that's where it's getting tougher. That's where it's getting tougher. And even the goalkeeping stats you gave, I'm assuming they're before this took place. Well, I'll tell you what, after that penalty shootout, his are probably worse than Mendy's now because of the numbers we're talking. Goalkeepers don't face 300-400 penalties. It's normally between 20 and 40, depending on the careers they've had. So, yeah, you can build up these stats and numbers and what have you, but there's never enough to build up anything that's that accurate unless you get the type of goalkeeper who saved 20, 25, 30 in their career, you know, which is quite rare. So, yeah, back to the point, it is a major point, and that was the second tweet I actually put out was in regards to that. And I genuinely, and I know you know my thoughts on what they should do when it comes to a penalty, which you're not having at all.
Let's not go there.
We're not going to go there again because I've said it way too many times. But the point is that it's now so heavily favoured in the striker's favour. I'd love to see how it's improved for a striker over the last few years, because I do think, and this is where I give both teams credit, because the majority use this technique now, which wasn't used at all years ago. The first one to use it against me was Heide Helgeson, if you remember him at Watford. And he would literally walk up to the ball and just stroll it in the opposite corner. Now, again, I back myself as someone who could save a penalty, yet I you know, and I mentioned Kelleher moving. That was me. And even when I didn't move with Heide Helgeson, if you're good enough, they have the ability where if you're not moving, provided they can get enough power in it, which they can, if you're not moving, just imagine you're stood on the goal line, you're not moving, then they can have like they don't have to have a run-up. They can just kick it in the corner and you're not going to be able to get there. So if they get that technique correct, they will score 100 out of 100, guaranteed. And the problem goalkeepers have now is that you're getting penalised for being a centimetre off your line, then you cannot go early. So this is where I did feel for both Kepa and Kelleher, because I just think that those that have adopted this technique, and so many have now, it's not just your Heide Helgesons or your Ivan Tonys or Jorginho's, like most now have adopted this technique and mastered this technique. Now that they've done that, it makes it almost impossible. It makes it boring, as far as I'm concerned, because the penalty's given. Players are playing for penalties even more because they know that 9 times out of 10, it's going to end up in a goal. Personally, and I've said this a few times and I'll keep saying it, I think it needs to be balanced a little bit more. You know, maybe not 50-50, but certainly 70, you know, 70-30, so that we do see a few more saves and there is a little bit more uncertainty when a penalty is given.
One last stat I've got for you. This will finish all the stats chat.
Go on.
But his shot, Kepa's shot, was actually the fastest of all the penalties taken. So it was a 0.4 second reaction to the referee blowing his whistle. On average, for the 22 players who took a penalty, it was 2.6 seconds. That might not seem big, but actually, as soon as the whistle went, bosh, he took the penalty straight away.
Look, and this is, and again, people say this is hindsight. I'm sure I was not the only one that as soon as Kelleher scored, that thought, Kepa's missing this.
Yeah.
I'm sure I wasn't the only one, because that is now, by the way, talk about psychology, broad term, but that is the psychological side of it, because in that moment, he will have been aware that he hasn't saved a penalty and now it's on him. And for a goalkeeper that's stepping into a potentially very positive situation, it's now turned into possibly the worst situation, which it was in the end. And you could tell, you know, he didn't look overly positive, which you wouldn't do in that situation. And he just wanted to get it over with as quickly as he could. So as you mentioned, it was blown. He wasn't going to place it. He wasn't going to try and rely on skill in that moment. He was just hoping that he could smash it hard enough and it would find a way into the back of the net. And unfortunately for him, obviously it's gone over the bar. But I think it does say a lot that it was blown. And he just wanted to get that moment over with as quickly as he possibly could.
Okay, so let's just clarify exactly what you would have done from the start of this game. You would have played Kepa instead of Édouard Mendy. Mendy's only played two. That was only his second game in the competition as a whole. Kepa has played all of this season, of course. So you would have played Kepa over Mendy, but because Mendy started, you then wouldn't have brought Kepa on.
Yes. That's exactly right. I would have started with Kepa, I think. And again, massive credit to Jurgen Klopp for doing that with Kelleher. And I promised that had Kelleher had made a mistake and they'd lost the game 1-0, I still would have stuck by that. And I will do moving forward, because we'll see a lot more of this. Goalkeepers that play in the Cups, especially the top teams, when there are so many Cup games, when you're talking, obviously, FA Cup, League Cup, European Cup, etc. There's so many opportunities for goalkeepers to play, and I think they should keep their place all the way through. That's my belief. I think you should have two goalkeepers that are that good that there isn't a significant difference between the two, so you're more than confident playing your so-called second choice in these games. So yeah, that's the first point. And then for me moving forward, I think, look, it has been a lovely little experiment. We've had some excitement with it. As you mentioned, it has happened positively a few times, certainly the Tim Krul one being a good example. But I go back to my point. I just think logically, if someone can give me one good reason as to why Kepa should have come on in that moment, just one good reason, then by all means, I'm open to it, and maybe I'll change my mind. But until I get that reason...
but then I've given you one. That happened earlier in the season and it worked.
No, that's not a good reason for me at all. Because
that's not a good enough reason, no?
No, it's not a good enough reason because, all right, are we saying that Mendy then plays and it doesn't work? Like, are we saying that if Mendy wouldn't have made those saves? Is that what we're saying? Because I remember the saves. It wasn't like they were unbelievable where he's full stretch, fingertips, Mendy's not getting there. If you're telling Mendy to dive the way that Kepa dived, are you telling me he's not making those saves?
Right, I see what you mean. But then, again, it goes back to the analysis again, doesn't it? That he would have been given the same information.
Same information.
So I'm presuming that you're saying that both goalkeepers would have dived exactly the same way regardless.
I believe so, yes. I think now the way that it's gone in terms of penalties, certainly when it comes to a penalty shootout, look, you've shown me, you've sent to me pictures of goalkeepers that have written on their water bottle or, you know, find a way of, I think Ben Foster on his iPad from memory back in the day, like, they'll all have decided before the penalties are taken, every single one. It's not a case of, look, gone are the days where it's a battle of wits and who's the most intelligent and, you know, can I figure out where you're going to go based on how you place the ball, how you run up, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of the time, you've made your decision 2 days before exactly where you're going to go. And I think, I might be wrong, but I'm quite confident that I'm not, is that Kepa knew exactly where he was diving for them in the same way that he did for this. It was more difficult for Kepa this time because there were more players that adopted the technique where they were watching him and then going the other way. But yeah, that would be my question for those that say, well, it worked in the other final, would be, again, would Mendy not have made those saves if he's given the same information? I think he would have had a very good chance of making those saves.
Yes, and you're right. With that, I get what you mean, because that being the case, he probably would have saved that Konate penalty. That was the chance, wasn't it? That was the one, the top-hand save. Absolutely should have saved that one. The Virgil van Dijk one was interesting because he leathered that, absolutely rifled it in. And you're right, the positioning of Kepa to shift so far over to his right side and not be able to save it. Had that been Mendy, I still don't think he would have saved it unless he'd also done the shift, but I don't think Mendy would have done that. I don't think he would have shifted over to his right. He would have been in the centre of his goal, and that being the case, there's no chance he's getting to that penalty.
Yeah, there was a little bit more gamesmanship, and you know, Kepa was obviously looking to do that. He's moving across his line. He was constantly out on the six-yard box. He was trying to find different ways of putting off the taker, and you could argue there's some value in that. Yeah, I just come back to the point, which is, I think if we're talking 15, 20 years ago, where maybe there's not the amount of research or the sports analytics teams that sit behind a lot of what goes on, and it was just a battle of wits, then I think this is a different conversation. I just think the way that football's gone, and so much of it now is about data, it's about doing your homework, it's about knowing the opposition inside out. I just think if we're in agreement that both goalkeepers would have known and had the same information and would likely have done similar things on the penalties, then my main point will always stand, which is I don't think the goalkeeper coming on, especially in this situation where Mendy's had such a good game, I can't ever see how that's going to have the psychological impact that perhaps Tuchel thought it would have in that moment.
Okay, to finish on Kepa, what now for the Spaniard? And what now for the narrative regarding Kepa? He did tweet after the game. He said, to fall and rise, disappointed after a big effort during the tournament. We keep working. Thanks, Chelsea family, for your support. And that's true as well. That was evident on social media that a lot of the Chelsea fans are actually saying Kepa's taken the hit for Mason Mount here, because had Mason Mount been more clinical in front of goal, Chelsea probably would have won that trophy. And when we do discuss the narrative, I hate to bring it up, but the comment made by Jamie Carragher at half-time I thought was actually disgraceful. Now, I was sitting with some friends watching this, and the reaction to me saying that it was a disgrace for Carragher to say he wished Kepa had been in goal when Edouard Mendy made that double save, one of my friends said, oh, come on, you've got to have some kind of humour in the game. Now, I disputed that because it's not humour. That's building the narrative that regardless of what Kepa has done in the time that Edouard Mendy has been away on AFCON duty, that's all just completely irrelevant now. No one's even looked at that. No one's even considered, outside of Chelsea supporters, how good Kepa was during that time.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think that, and it, again, it interests me where we're in a, you know, we're in a place now where there's such awareness as to what you're saying and discrimination being quite a big subject. But this for me is a classic example of, would he ever say that about a centre-back? You know, him obviously playing in defence and having a real appreciation for the position. Would he ever say it about a centre-back that, oh, you know, if only he was playing because he's terrible? He wouldn't, because he's got such information about that particular position, and he'll have a strong feeling towards centre-backs. So it's the reason that you never see him absolutely hammer any centre-backs in the way that he does about goalkeepers. Like, it is a lesser position almost. It's really derogatory. The whole, you know, we joke about it, where it's the whole, like, you know, what is he doing shout? Like, how many times have we heard him say that? Like, yet he wouldn't do that about outfield players. So it is, no, I hate it. I think it's terrible. I think saying things like that is, but it's basically bullying. It's the, you know, it's essentially bullying. That's what it is. And it's terrible. But then what do you do? We've got no one there to stand up for him.
Okay, should we finish on a high? Let's finish on a high.
Yeah, let's do it. Go on.
Let's finish on a positive and just turn it back on Kuivin Kelleher, because an incredible season he's had so far. This is his first trophy for the club. It puts him on the wall at the Melwood training ground. There was a lot of chat about this after the game. This was apparently by order of John Achterberg. I didn't know this existed, that there is a mural of 13 goalkeepers who have won trophies at the club. Actually, before we move on to the next bit, there's no chance you're going to be able to name all 13, but how many of those 13 can you name?
Oh, let me think. I'm going to go with Bruce Grobbelaar. I'm going to go David James, Ray Clements, Sander Vesterveld. Yeah, okay. I'm going to go with Alisson, of course. Now Kelleher, so that's... Is that five or six?
Kelleher makes it 14.
Makes it 14, okay.
So you've got five of the 13.
Okay, so then we've got, let me think, did Karius get anything? No, he didn't, did he? I feel like there's loads that are going to just come to me in a minute. And Brad Friedel? No, go on then, hit me with a handful more.
You've done well. You've done all right, mate. I'll give you that. So you gave me Clements, you gave me Grobbelaar, you gave me Alisson, David James and Sander Vesterveld. You didn't give me Pepe Reina.
Oh, wow. Yes, of course.
You didn't give me Jerzy Dudek. Istanbul, mate. Come on.
That was the most obvious one. Yeah, go on.
And Adrian, of course, against Chelsea, also in the Super Cup a couple of seasons ago. Apart from that, Cyril Sidlow, Bill Perkins, Alicia Scott. I believe that's how you say that name. Tommy Lawrence and Sam Hardy. So Kuivin Kelleher will be the 14th goalkeeper on that list. And according to Jurgen Klopp, who did say that sentiment won, basically being a human won rather than being a football coach yesterday, that Kuivin Kelleher is the best number two in the world now. He thinks Alisson's the best number one, but he thinks Kuivin Kelleher is the best number two in the world now. I'm not sure what to make of that comment if you are Kuivin Kelleher. How positive is that a thing?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's obviously intended very positively, and I think it is hugely positive. I think that, yeah, look at where he was not so long ago. And as I mentioned, without necessarily having a ton of loans, he is now in a position that he's very much on the map. It's very interesting, actually, Irish football, when you look at the fact they've got, obviously, Bazunu, who's got the plaudits that he's got. You've got Travers, who's absolutely flying at Bournemouth as well. And now you've got Kelleher. It's certainly exciting times for Irish goalkeeping. But no, I think it's a massive compliment. And I did love the way in which, I think it was Jordan Henderson, made a real point of highlighting Kelleher after the game. And, You could see that he was kind of pointing towards him, and all the cameras were on Kelleher. The way that they are as a team and the way that they really have each other's back, I thought was great. And for a young goalkeeper coming in like that, that's exactly what you need. And it just felt like that. It just felt like they had his back. He was very assured, very calm in how he played, made crucial saves. Obviously, in the end, great penalty that he took. Just loads to love about this day. And certainly, you know, a manager like Jurgen Klopp, when he is as positive as he is about him, that's everything a young goalkeeper could possibly want. Actually, just to add to that, though, the difficulty we'll have now is, you know, we talk about pathways. Like, what is the next step for him? Because, all right, this is a great day at the moment, and this will be a great week for him, and it's an exciting end to the season for the club. But, of course, you go into next season. Does he then stay as a number two? Does he then get himself out and get some football? Because, look, he's not necessarily going to get ahead of Alisson anytime soon. So is it one where he gets a loan to another Premier League club? Would Liverpool even allow that? That's the decisions he will have coming up. For now, his progression to this point could not have been more perfect, but he will have some decisions in the not-too-distant future.
Okay, Richard, good stuff. A good dissection of what was quite a remarkable 120-plus minutes on Sunday late afternoon. There's plenty more to cover, but we're going to give everything a break until next Monday, when we shall return with Between the Sticks and go through all the goalkeeping goodness from all four tiers of English football, FA Cup 2. So plenty to cover.
Excellent. Sounds good to me.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.
Wait.